Chapter 1 The air was festive, as the flute quartet filled the room with its soft melody. Harmonies reverberated off the walls in perfect pitch, providing the audience a moment of clarity before the unexpected tempo change. A low rumble from the bass drum seemed to grab each of the heartbeats, forcing them to alter cadence and time as the unique piece transitioned into the climactic final movement. With a crescendo of sound and a flick of the wrist, the director brought the small orchestra to the abrupt conclusion, resulting in a burst of applause from the enchanted guests. The vegetation that made up the backdrop to this 20-piece orchestra was also home to the chickens that roosted there, all seemingly content with the musical performance they were subject to. If it were not for the warning signs regarding these feathered creatures, one would not even know they were around, being so well behaved as to think they were only props. But the signs were unambiguous. Do not let the chickens out of the fenced area, please. This fenced-off back wall of the tiny forest is the area dedicated to sound quality, with its curving lines meticulously honed to produce the utmost clarity for the listeners. While the varieties of botany provided just the right amount of attenuation for the room, every square inch of the enclosed structure has its intended purpose and look of extravagance, for this is Weiss Harbor, a resort unlike any other, with the finest in furnishings, ambience, and view. To arrive here meant that you were someone special, an aristocrat of sorts, a person of wealth and power, who had not so much earned the right, but had been selected as worthy. At least that's how John West summed it up to several people of his acquaintance who asked what it would take to be put on the guest list. The ships had been arriving at Weiss Harbor for most of the day, depositing their overwhelmed passengers at the tunnel entrance. The carpeted floor, bright lights, and colorful walls built upon the excitement they had been feeling since first departing on the trip. It culminated in a long walk through the passageway that transformed into a cavernous dome. What made this dome so special was that it lay deep below the surface of the moon. And what made today distinctive was a dedication to an object whose final resting place was just outside the lobby entrance of the Weiss Hotel and Casino. If John West had known that this priceless artifact was going to be used as a marketing tool, he might have insisted on a different location. But with the new home established and the dedication in full swing, all he could do was smile and hope the media would cut him some slack for a change. Unlikely, he brooded as his mind wandered back to today's lead-up. Most of what he had seen publicized was close to accurate, but people viewing the coverage were presented with a lot of speculation surrounding a few facts. From a historical point of view, the collision with the highly polished granite box near Saturn's orbit was considered our first compelling evidence that alien life exists. This became known as our first encounter, even though there was no one to encounter, and the 2-meter by 3-meter by 4-meter precision-cut box was over 6,000 years old, hewn from a solid piece of granite. Fate had determined where and when that first meeting took place, but it was perseverance that located the rest, and thanks to the discovery, history was being rewritten. We are no longer alone in the universe, even though the evidence gave no clue as to what that statement meant. Later examination of the boxes showed that they originally contained a sort of hydrocarbon-based compound with a fair amount of carbohydrates mixed in. Streaks of the black goo-looking stuff lined several of the boxes. Still in others, nothing remained. The goo had an internal structure of open and closed cells not unlike foam, as if some type of gas had caused the substance to expand and harden. This material remained in that state even after being thawed, and any type of percolates that may have originally been present dissipated eons ago. There were no skeletons or hair follicles or cryptic writings or anything else. Just large, highly polished granite boxes containing, well, something. And most still had their covers intact, with each of the boxes weighing more than 100 earth tons. To the casual observer, one of the most amazing features was that each of the granite boxes the pilot located was identical to the other, and they were all loosely clustered together, wandering through space near the gigantic planet whose orbit they shared. After a basic attempt to map out the location of any remaining boxes, the test pilot of the first high-speed space drive system stopped at 14. They were just too scattered, and she had better things to do. One thing was certain. The tireless worldwide media wanted interviews with this woman. This was the greatest discovery since cavemen realized that you could turn sliced bread into toast if you hold it over a fire. Actually, there were two things. First, everyone wanted interviews. And second, Sarah West did not give interviews. Yeah, that did not go over too well. As her father, John West, pointed out to the growing number of complaints, "What do you want me to do, ground her?" Sarah is John's oldest daughter, and Rachel is the youngest, with a year and a half between them. A contentious pair growing up, they both came to realize that with a little effort, the other could be used to their own advantage. Sisters for life. Sarah had the smarts and daring which she spun into a medical career, then test pilot, while Rachel, being the driven artistic talent, did most of the design and management of the first two settlements, first on the moon and then on Mars. The latter, dubbed Mars Colony, would become home to the system's expansion ring. From there, the branches would grow into settlements throughout the local cluster of stars. You may be wondering why Mars and not Earth as the point of departure for this expansion. Well, that involves John's paranoia regarding his own invention, the step drive, and the potential damage it could cause Earth if not managed correctly. We will get to that later. Suffice to say, John and his two daughters built an empire that persists to this day. It has grown and flourished not only as a business, but as an outreach. To provide some context, we need to go back to the humble beginnings, and as so often happens, it all started with a garage. "Hey, old man," came the call from the kitchen. "What's up, mother?" Three children sat petrified, afraid that the story was going to end, then relaxed when they heard the request. "Are you barbecuing tonight?"
"Can do," came the instant reply from the man firmly planted on the sofa, surrounded by his granddaughter, Chandra, Dottie, the 8-year-old next-door neighbor, and Darius, the 16-year-old boy who lived down the block.
"Darius, you're invited for supper," the elderly woman said as she poked her head around the corner, drying her hands as she waited for a reply.
"I will have to ask my parents," the youth informed her. A quick flip of a damp towel snapped in the air as Chandra's grandmother continued.
"I'll give her a call. She was asking me about one of the flowers in the bed, and I looked up the name this morning," she said, turned, and left the group unscathed. The youth had made a pact before they entered the house. If they could get Chandra's grandpa to get into the mood of talking, they would push for the story. Not just any story, but the one that only he could tell. He was one of the few who was there from the start, and one of the few who knew the truth. The problem was, if he started talking about his time working with John West, he would always skip over the good parts and move to the end. Today was going to be different. They would steer the man's recollections. They wouldn't let him miss a single good part, and they wouldn't let up until he had told the whole story, something that all three had only gotten bits and pieces of because he didn't like to dwell on the memories.
"I'll have to clean the grill," he informed his audience, and the children could see his mind was moving off topic. It was time to get him back on track.
"The garage? You mean the garage in Dottie's house?" The elderly face suddenly beamed in remembrance.
"Of course I mean Dottie's garage. The Clappers bought the place from West. It didn't look like it does now, mind you," he said,
eyes fixed on a point on the far wall as the memories flooded back in. The workshop, situated behind the plain three-bedroom ranch-style house, bustled with activity as the test of the first wing assembly was underway. The garage was not particularly spacious. The lighting, fluorescent fixtures that produced about half the light they should have, illuminated a dusty, shadow-filled room whose cracked concrete foundation made for an uneven surface to walk on. For John, it was this place of solitude, where his mind could reach into the unknown and search for possibilities. Looking around, one is confronted by tools and machines that other ordinary dwellings would have little use for. The CNC foam cutter sat against the back wall, adjacent to the bench with all the components necessary to apply a fiberglass layer to the foam cutout. The table and miter saw sat over by the metal bench where the welding took place. Then there was a space open for his most recent creation, the wing. And as John looked on, Shannon Beale was in the process of fitting the last active foil to the frame. "It's going to vibrate like crazy. You know that," Shannon pointed out, what she had pointed out many times already. "Have a little faith, woman." It was not the first time John had used that line with apprehension in his voice.
"Wait, did they really say that, or are you just making it up?" Chandra demanded.
"I was outside watering the lawn. I could hear everything they were saying," he said, suddenly reddening. "Not that I was eavesdropping. The garage door was open and they were talking," he quickly clarified.
"Where did they meet?" Dottie asked.
"He and Shannon met at the college. Some kind of science symposium at one of the guest speakers' lectures. The talk had something to do with problems that several branches of science were running into, where theory didn't line up with fact. Anyway, a debate between the two gelled into a friendship, and eventually into a collaboration that for John was just what he needed after the divorce, to reinvigorate his inventive mind. For Shannon, it was a chance to show off her engineering prowess." The children's attention was genuine. They had never heard that part of the story before. What else hadn't they heard?
"So you got to see the first wing in operation? Cool." Darius marveled at the prospect.
"No, not that one. I barely knew Wes back in those days. That was the day that Rachel named the company."
"Rachel named the company?" the three kids cried out at once.
This caused a round of laughter over what had just happened. "Rachel was watching the contraption as it hovered there at the end of the tethers, and I heard her. She said, 'Watch, I can do that too.' All the while, she was performing a retro hula dance. Then she said, 'I call it the Western Wave.' I heard it, plain as day."
"I thought he scared all the neighbors with that thing," Chandra prodded even further.
This was not a secret. "That larger mechanical monstrosity was anchored to the floor of the shop, and the vibration was shaking the ground and the surrounding houses.
It scared the hell out of
father,"
came the rebuke from the other room. He looked at the kids and smiled. Seeing the grinning faces, he continued. "I walked over to see what all the commotion was, and that is the first time I saw the wing in action." He could see that the children were mesmerized.
"So it was flying around?" Darius asked with a quizzical look.
"No, like I said, it was anchored to the floor. He had all sorts of sensors taking readings and such, but the thing didn't move."
"What did you do?" Dottie asked.
"I asked him to turn that damn contraption off, that's what I told him. Then West apologized, and that was the day we struck up our friendship." Suddenly, Chandra's grandpa was starting to stand up.
"Where are you going?" Dottie blurted out in frustration. "You aren't finished telling us a story."
"Bathroom break," he shot back as he left the room. Denise made her way into the living room with a plate of cookies and a glass of milk for each. Setting the tray down, she heard Darius ask,
"You knew the West family pretty well, didn't you?"
Oh, heavens, yes, she said, then straightening with a pleasant smile on her face.
I was just wondering what you thought of John West.
Oh, well, he was very nice to be around if you could keep his mind off of work or inventing or whatever you call it.
I swear it was that garage that broke up their marriage, she said absentmindedly.
The garage made them leave each other? Dottie asked with a hint of concern.
Well, he was always in there doing something.
My mom spends a lot of time in the garage.
Dottie's concern was growing into fear.
I'm sorry, sweetheart, Denise caught the reference.
Your mom and dad both spend a lot of time in the garage, but they also spend a lot of time together with you and your brother. Am I right?
Dottie's nodding head still wore a look of concern.
John and Deb spent most of their time doing different things, and they grew apart. John out in the garage all the time, and Deb off with the kids doing other things.
I'm sorry if I scared you.
It wasn't the garage. It was the time away from each other that broke them up.
Denise could see that the words had a calming effect.
But he was a bit of a paranoid, she concluded, as the sounds of footsteps interrupted her thoughts.
Who was a paranoid?
Grandma says that John West was a paranoid.
Chandra passed along the information to her grandfather.
He wasn't a paranoid per se.
Just a little while ago, you were telling the kids about him being paranoid about his step drive.
Well, he was certainly paranoid about the technology falling into the wrong hands. And he was a bit paranoid about having the wing reverse engineered, but that's normal.
Normal paranoia? Darius repeated with a goofy grin.
Sure, we all get a little paranoid every now and then.
Uh-huh.
Denise said.
Darius, your mom said it's okay to stay for supper, she said over her shoulder, leaving the room to spend some time in the garden.
Were you there when he finally launched the bridge?
Darius said without losing a step.
Sure, but that took a couple of years to get right. At first, West didn't even know what he wanted to do with the wing. He figured some sort of an emergency rescue vehicle for tall buildings. Hell, he had a bunch of ideas, but like I said, he was a bit paranoid. Anyone who sees it work can understand it. Even I understood how the thing worked after I saw it run. And the guy didn't have a room full of lawyers to protect his investment. And he knew that deeper pockets would take one look at it and build something close. Not quite the same, but close. Then they could patent it, and West would end up an also-ran.
So what did he do? Dottie asked, not really understanding this part of the conversation.
He told me the inspiration was seeing the new administrator for NASA talking about reining in the budget.
NASA?
Dottie was hearing a lot of new words.
The National Aeronautics and Space Agency, Darius enlightened the youth.
They send rockets into outer space.
Dottie seemed content with the explanation.
What about it?
Was all she could think to say.
Well, launching rockets into space is expensive, and West came up with the idea of lifting rockets really high into the air before launching them. It saves on gas.
The child nodded her head, as this bit of logic made sense. But first, he had to build it, and John West wasn't made of money. So he started looking for investors to help pay to build it. As it turned out, other people like to keep their money.
This last comment caused the old man to burst into laughter. Darius got a half-grin on his face, but in reality, only one person in the room got the joke.
Is that when he got to know Casey LeBlanc? Chandra asked.
This was someone she knew well. She also understood that Casey was the first to back John West's idea.
No, John didn't meet up with Casey for another year or so.
No, I introduced him to Joseph Zent about that time. A guy who works with electricity like me. The two shared similar interests and ideas, and that's when they read that article about that aerospace company going out of business.
The outfit was looking to build a rocket engine using something called plasma. And before Dottie could ask, Darius spoke up.
Plasma is the fourth state of matter, solid, liquid, gas, plasma. Plasma is affected by electricity.
Oh,
Dottie said, wishing Chandra's grandpa would get back to the good parts.
So John and a small group of people got together and purchased the plasma engine this company was building. This small group is who John is talking about when he mentions the core. It was the core group of electrical engineers who came together and got the engine working.
The one we used to get to the moon?
Dottie asked.
Mm-hmm,
came the reply. It took some redesign, and it wasn't cheap, but after they got it done is when John went looking for money again and ran into Casey. At first, Casey and his finance group all thought John was a kook. But with the help from Shannon and Trevor Noah, they built a small ship to house the engine. Then John started working on the bridge to lift the craft way up in the air.
How high?
Dottie asked.
You've been on a bridge before, Chandra reminded the girl. It goes really high.
The young girl was nodding her head, remembering the trip to the harbor and all the fun she had had.
And then they made Weiss Harbor, Dottie finally understood.
Not right away, the elder voice corrected. First they had to get to the moon, and that took another year of testing and fixing and hand-wringing. There were a lot of very nervous people when Miguel took that thing to the moon for the first time.
Did they land at the harbor?
Dottie wasn't letting go of her favorite place ever.
You just flew around the moon and came home. They did that a few times to see how everything would work, and then Miguel and John made that first landing. They even shared a bottle of champagne up there, sitting in that little ship. He smiled at the recollection. They weren't the only people drinking champagne that day.
So when did they find Weiss Harbor? Dottie demanded to know. It was that important.
Well, remember, child, Weiss Harbor was nothing but a big hole below the surface of the moon.
It was hiding.
This last sentence was spoken in a whisper that sent a chill through Dottie's body and deposited a big smile on her face. Finally, Gramps was on to the good part. He caught the sudden change to all the children.
How did they find it?
Chandra asked. Seismograph, he stated emphatically. Seeing the quizzical faces, he elaborated. You can take pictures underground if you know how to do it. And that's where a seismograph comes in. You plant sensors on the surface and then shake the ground. The vibrations that are returned to the sensors from the shaking help to build a picture. Do this often times over a big enough area and you can resolve an accurate data set. He smiled at the nodding heads and the fact that they had no idea what he was talking about. Anyway, they imaged an area south of where this group first set up shop and found that underground cavern. Then they got some help from a mining company, and the guys transformed from seismograph to mining.
Did they dig the tunnels with shovels?
Dottie was confused by this idea. The tunnel into Weiss Harbor was very long, and she remembered helping Grams dig the holes for the saplings in the front yard. It was not fun. The seismograph work meant that they had access to explosives. It's what they used to shake the ground with in the first place. So the explosives broke up the rock and they used a small tracked vehicle to remove the rubble.
They used concrete on the walls, right?
Darius asked, knowing the answer already.
Sure did. That contraption was the hardest thing to get to the moon. At first, anyway. All sorts of big equipment started showing up once the tunnel was dug.
Like what?
Dottie asked.
Well, we built the first power station with the solar panels spinning up a cavity connected to the generator on the surface.
He could see the looks of confusion on all the faces.
The cavity is nothing more than a cylinder that spins on bearings. When it gets going fast enough, liquid is squirted in, and like riding a merry-go-round, it wants to move to the sides. The more liquid,
the more weight, spinning, the more energy there is to be extracted. Extract too much, and the cylinder slows down. When that happens, you dump some of the liquid, and it speeds back up. That keeps the generator spinning at the right speed, he said, concluding his explanation.
How come the stuff doesn't boil off? Darius asked.
The whole thing is sealed and buried to keep the temperature stable, and because the thing is sealed, the vapor pressure keeps it a liquid.
Did you help install it?
I wired it into the site. If you ever walk out to the power plant, you'll see where I signed off on the work, stenciled on the outside of the generator, he beamed. And it wasn't long after we got power into the cavern that the chicken showed up. The recollection caused the kids to smile. The signs warning that if you let the chickens out of the garden, then you had to clean up the mess they made.
They were there for the eggs, right? Chandra asked.
Sure. And the diversion. Nobody thought anything about letting a dozen chickens loose in an enclosed space on the moon, but we found out that was a bad idea. Chickens can fly pretty well on the moon, just like you kids. The sparkling eyes and nodding heads proved his point.
Did God make the cavern to be found?
Dottie was trying to work out the implications in her head. Some big zaps of electricity made that cavern, Gramps enlightened the group. Sometime in the past, there was a lot of electricity being passed between planetary bodies, and the moon was right in the middle of it. The power of those lightning strikes was enough to vaporize that subsurface rock. There are examples of electrical discharge all over the moon's surface, if you're willing to look, he explained, then heard the screen door open and close. It's all right there in the archive, he said, pointing at the computer on the desk.
Archive? What archive? Darius insisted.
Mother has been compiling video and interviews and ship's logs and all sorts of stuff, haven't you, Mother?
17 terabytes so far, she announced from the kitchen as she prepared a bug repellent for the plants. Can we have a look through it?
Chandra asked, a bit miffed that this was the first she was hearing about it. I'll fire up the computer in a bit. My program is going to be on soon, so it will give you kids something to occupy your time and not bother me with questions. This brought on additional smiles.
How long before the harbor was built did it take John to make his first step drive? Darius asked.
Oh, well, that took some time, he said, with a distant look on his face. First he had to get the core team to understand the concept, then they had to build the thing, without even knowing how.
I don't get it, Chandra paused the forward momentum of the conversation. How do you just dream up the step drive or step space or whatever? How do you do that?
Denise was still inside, and the question sparked a memory.
His wife told me once, she began, screwing the top on the spritzer bottle. John could talk her to sleep sometimes. He would think about it, and at night try to explain his ideas. She said he could talk her to sleep, talking about gravity.
Gravity? Chandra looked confused. What has step space got to do with gravity?
What's gravity? Dottie asked.
Chandra gave her a stern teacher look and explained.
If you jump in the air, you come back down. That's gravity.
Oh.
Then why do I jump higher on the moon? She asked out of frustration.
That's different gravity, Chandra educated the innocent child.
Oh.
Kids, Gramps continued. The entire transcript of the conversation that John had, discussing his idea of what gravity is, and he took on a distant look. What did he call it again? The look remained as the children waited patiently. Oh, yeah. The electrically tensioned vacuum energy is what he referred to as gravity. Something about quantum mechanics and harmonic oscillators. It was always above me, he pointed out.
West always had a problem with Einstein's interpretation of gravity because of the information speed limit the guy placed on everything. Seems gravity would prefer not to have a speed limit.
Must have grown up in Montana.
Once again, the bursts of laughter out of the man stymied the children as they looked, one to another, hoping to gain some insight. Wiping the tears from his eyes, he again pointed out, "Just have a look in the archives if you're interested in that stuff." Slowly getting off the couch, Gramps made his way over to the machine on the desk and powered it up. He then provided them with a quick tutorial on how to operate the archive. "See how the lines go across the screen and each has a circle in different spots? Well, the entire catalog is broken down by what I call families. Click on a circle and you'll get some info. Drag the timeline and all the timelines move together to keep the dates the same." He demonstrated viewing data from several of the different locations. "If I were you, I'd start somewhere around here," pointing out a date on the top of the screen. "Now, if you kids don't mind, my program is coming on, and I want a glass of that milk that Mother neglected to include me on," he said, then disappeared into the kitchen as the three children began to argue about seating locations, mouse operations, and whether or not everybody was ready, which prompted the inevitable need for each to use the bathroom. Finally, with Gramps' show softly playing in the background, they were situated and ready. Their own show was about to start.